Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a big tent, the Republican Party likes to say. But for years now, the religious right has worked hard to put a pulpit in the middle and has often been the face of Republicanism. Enter John McCain, who never could sit still during those sermons. Now he's brought Sarah Palin along to the delight of the evangelical right. What can we learn from this story, and what does it mean for the November election and a potential McCain-Palin administration? This hour on Point, live from St. Paul on day three of the Republican National Convention, the religious right, and John McCain. You can join the conversation. Evangelicals, are you fired up now for McCain plus Palin? What does it mean for the country if the religious right is on or off the ticket? How will faith and values play in the McCain-Obama contest? We will hear different voices this hour on the role of the evangelical right in the Republican Party today, and we'll ask our panel about some fiery remarks made right here yesterday by anti-abortion campaigner Phyllis Schlafly. But we're going to begin with a look back to the fiery speeches of last night. Joining me now is Karen Tumulty, national political reporter for Time magazine. She's covering the convention for Time. Karen, thanks for being with us.
Hi, how are you doing, Tom?
Very well. So there we saw last night Laura Bush, George Bush, the president, Fred Thompson, Joe Lieberman. They came, and some video as well of Ronald Reagan. Everybody came out swinging. What did you think of the first night of a real program here, Karen?
Well, it really is just a prelude, I think, to, I mean, in some ways, I think Sarah Palin's speech tonight is going to possibly even overshadow McCain's acceptance speech. You know, the stagecraft was as interesting as what was said. The fact that, you know, the president came in by video, not in person, which, you know, it sort of kept the distance, I think, that the campaign is trying to keep from a very unpopular president. Joe Lieberman, I think, was somewhat harsher than a lot of Democrats were expecting. They had expected him to praise his friend John McCain, but I think he was a lot more critical of Barack Obama than, you know, Democrats had expected, especially considering, you know, he was standing on their stage 8 years ago.
Mm. Let's listen first to a little bit of what we heard last night. President Bush addressing St. Paul's XL Center via satellite link, as you say, from Washington. He reminded the audience of 9/11 and said John McCain was the man to lead America during these unsafe times.
We live in a dangerous world, and we need a president who understands the lessons of September the 11th, 2001, that to protect America, we must stay on the offense, stop attacks before they happen, and not wait to be hit again. The man we need is John McCain.
President George Bush last night by satellite link, not in as prime a time as Fred Thompson and Joe Lieberman. Safety and fear at work there, Karen Tumulty, and also, of course, Bush himself. How do you expect John McCain in the home stretch to November 4th to deal to handle those themes? First of all, the president, and secondly, the 9/11 issue that George Bush used to such effect in 2004.
Well, I think that, you know, taking the second one first, I mean, the 9/11 issue was very important. It was very important in 2004 in particular in bringing over the women's vote, the so-called security moms who really emerged as a political force. That, I don't think, is necessarily going to work this time just because, you know, every poll you look at and just about every voter you talk to suggests that the economy has really overshadowed that as a, you know, as terrorism is a real issue. As far as the president, I think they're going to continue to use him among the Republican base where he is still somewhat more popular, but he's not going to have a big kind of public role. He's not going to be out stumping for John McCain.
Maybe that was it last night. Fred Thompson got huge applause for attacking Obama's inexperience, as he called it. Americans, he said, are dealing with terrorism and nuclear weapons.
To deal with these challenges, the Democrats present a history-making nominee for president. History-making in that he's the most liberal, most inexperienced nominee to ever run for president.
Bang, bang, boom, from Fred Thompson, and then Senator Joe Lieberman up there last night saying, you know, more or less Obama talks the talk but doesn't have the experience to back it up.
Senator Barack Obama is a gifted and eloquent young man who I think can do great things for our country in the years ahead. But, my friends, eloquence is no substitute for a record, not in these tough times for America.
Carol Templeton with Time Magazine, attacks on Obama and especially in Fred Thompson's pitch last night, a presentation of John McCain's life. He's an actor. It was effective in that way. Do you think it's going to be effective for the American public, the wider American public? It was wildly popular, the references to his POW time and all the rest in the hall. How do you think it plays beyond, Karen?
Well, first of all, Fred Thompson, you know, a lot of people in the hall were wondering where this guy was when he was running for president.
Where was this fired up man with the great delivery?
Exactly, who ran one of the most terrible presidential campaigns we've seen in a long time. I mean, look, biography is going to be a big part of, you know, a big part, possibly the main part of McCain's campaign going forward. I mean, the whole theme of this convention is country first. And it also has become, by the way, the answer to every criticism of John McCain that comes from the other side, whether it's, you know, he can't remember how many houses he has. Well, the answer you get back from the campaign is, well, he had one for 5.5 years in Hanoi. And, you know, and when it was, every time it is suggested that he is a little bit off message or out of sync with the country on policy, that the campaign's answer is to go back to his character as tested in Vietnam.
We'll hear more biography in the course of this convention. Rudy Giuliani will be up, and of course, Sarah Palin tonight. Everything, so much seems to come back to her, Karen. Why? Is it because of the questions around her or the enthusiasm? We're talking this hour about the religious right, the enthusiasm among the Christian right Republicans for her. Why so many roads leading back to this relatively inexperienced vice president at John McCain's side?
Well, I think far more than any vice presidential pick that I can think of, she really is a reflection on the candidate himself. A lot of questions are being raised about whether there was an adequate vetting process, but she also, you know, McCain here is doubling down on her as a reflection of his own character, you know, his own maverickiness, if you will. And beyond that, Sarah Palin is McCain's effort to reach out to women voters, not these disaffected Hillary Clinton voters that we've been hearing so much about, I think, but the much broader electorate of more independent swing voters. And in these swing states where he is facing an enormous gender gap, their bet is that Sarah Palin, if not her stand on the issues, which are actually pretty out of sync with a lot of moderate women, but her life story, you know, the struggles of her complicated life and her balancing work and family, they are hoping that women voters are going to relate to that, and by relating to that, be a little more open to John McCain.
Very complicated lately. And then, of course, there's her Christian right affiliation, which has got all kinds of excitement here in that community. We're going to talk about this hour. Karen Templeton, national political reporter for Time Magazine. Thanks very much for being with us, Karen.
Thank you.
With me right now in the Excel Center on the bluff here above the Mississippi River in St. Paul is Stephen Waldman, editor-in-chief, president, co-founder of BeliefNet. He's also author of The Founding Faith, Politics, Providence, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. Stephen Waldman, thanks very much for being with us in St. Paul.
My pleasure.
So, Sarah Palin's announcement has made an enormous difference. You can feel it here among even right-leaning evangelicals, fundamentalists, the religious right at this convention. Give us a sense. You must be very in touch with that. What have you felt since the Palin announcement last Friday on that front?
Well, to go a couple days before the Palin announcement, there was this real sense of depression and angst of, like, people on the religious conservatives trying to figure out how they were going to muddle through this election. They were coming around to supporting John McCain. There was not a real question of that, but they really didn't have their heart in it. And the Palin announcement has completely turned that around. And it started off with the fact that she's very pro-life. The decision that she had
in all cases, rape, incest, you name it,
yeah,
no abortion.
But more important than her stand on the issues was the decision in her own life to have a child who has Down syndrome, mm-hmm. which to them showed that this person was not a pro-life phony. It was someone who was living out her convictions. And then when it became known that her teen daughter was pregnant, mm-hmm. that didn't hurt with religious conservatives. It helped.
Because?
Because it was example number two of her living her convictions.
Daughter so, Bristol was not sent off to Anchorage to an abortion clinic.
Exactly. A lot of Americans faced with their teen daughter getting pregnant out of wedlock would have told her to get an abortion.
What about the moral failing criticism there? Hey, what did you teach your daughter? She's gone off and gotten pregnant.
There's some discussion of that, but I think that, you know, almost everyone in the pro-life community as well in the pro-choice community has faced dilemmas like this. So they're not holding
everyone who lives.
Right. They're not holding that against her nearly as much as they're praising her for the decision to carry the baby to term.
How fired up is this community for the McCain-Palin ticket now? Can they make the kind of difference in this campaign that they were accredited with making in the 2004 election?
I think so, yeah. I think they're going to be working very hard. And this was, you know, when you talk about the evangelical vote, there's two issues. One is who are they going to vote for? And two is how hard are they going to work? I think McCain had already gotten their votes. That wasn't really the issue. But Obama has put a lot of effort into a get-out-the-vote machinery.
Yeah.
He's going to have, by all evidence, a fantastic effort on that ground. They needed their own enthusiastic shock troops. Now they have it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Republican National Convention. We are looking at the religious right and the John McCain campaign. They were cool to John McCain. Now with Sarah Palin, they're hot. We'll ask what that means for the campaign and the country. And we'll look back on a controversial moment on this show yesterday with anti-abortion matriarch Phyllis Schlafly. We're joined in this hour by Stephen Waldman, editor-in-chief of BeliefNet, BeliefNet.com. He knows this community very well and communities beyond it. He's with me here in St. Paul. Joining us right now from Nashville, Tennessee, is the Reverend Richard Land, president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. Richard Land, Reverend Land, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you. And hello, Steve.
Hi, Richard. How are you?
It's great to have you both. And with us from Vancouver, Washington, is Kevin Hebert. He's co-pastor of the Church in Vancouver. He's also a member of Restoring Eden, a Christian environmental organization actively supporting rights of environmental issues in a Christian manner, as they put it. Kevin Hebert, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, and good morning.
Hi, great to have you. Richard Land, let me come first to you. How did you feel about the John McCain ticket a week ago, I guess, last Wednesday, and with Sarah Palin on it? How do you feel about it today?
Well, let me first of all say I don't endorse candidates. I haven't done so ever since I took my present position as head of the public policy arm of the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the nation's largest Protestant denomination, 20 years ago. But I can tell you that I can observe the enthusiasm, and the enthusiasm gap has been closed in the wake of Sarah Palin's being put on the ticket. John McCain in the last month has delivered a powerful 1-2 punch that has really gotten evangelicals and conservative Catholic pro-life voters really excited. The first was at the Saddleback Civil Forum, where he was unequivocally pro-life, unequivocally for strict constructionist judges, and said, "I will have a pro-life administration." But it's one thing to talk the talk. It's another thing to walk the walk. And when he picked Sarah Palin, that's the first appointment in a prospective McCain administration. And he picked a strong, pro-life governor. And as Stephen said earlier, she really excites pro-lifers and particularly pro-life women. And the reason is she has, she walks the walk. She kept that baby. She found out about halfway through her pregnancy that she had a Down syndrome child, and she carried that child to term. And when it came to the revelation about her 17-year-old daughter, you know, if that had been a pro-choice family, we would probably never have known that her 17-year-old daughter was pregnant because the baby would have been aborted. As Barack Obama said during the campaign, if one of his daughters made a mistake, he wouldn't want her to be punished with a child. Pro-lifers don't see children as punishment. They see them as a blessing, and the Palin family made a pro-life decision.
We heard exactly that kind of observation from Phyllis Schlafly yesterday, put a bit more more cuttingly. We're gonna listen back to that and get the view of our panel today on it. But Kevin Hebert, well, first, Richard, let me put this to you. In 2004, conservative Christians were encouraged in many cases from the pulpit to get out and vote. Mailing lists and all the rest came into play in George Bush's reelection. Is there time, do you expect, that kind of deep organizational support, not just enthusiasm, to swing in behind McCain Palin?
Well, first of all, I would quibble with some of those descriptions. I mean, I took a public stance and castigated the Republican National Committee when they called for church directories to be sent in to national headquarters and called upon pastors across the country to stand in the pulpit and ask and tell their people that they should not do it, that it was a violation of the life of the body. And I personally don't know but one pastor who actually made an endorsement of a candidate from the pulpit. What they did do was talk about getting people registered and getting them involved. Now, I don't think anyone is going to forge the kind of personal connection with evangelical voters that George W. Bush did. That Ronald Reagan didn't do it. I don't think John McCain's going to do it. But I think that the enthusiasm gap that we had, Time magazine had a poll out 2 weeks ago that said that 70% of white evangelicals were planning to vote for John McCain and 19% were planning to vote for Barack Obama, but only 15% of that 70% said that they were enthusiastic about voting for John McCain. Well, I would say that was before Saddleback and that was before Sarah Palin. I would say that in the wake of that 1-2 punch, of the 70% who say they're going to vote for McCain, about 65% are going to do so enthusiastically. And as Stephen says, that's not just a vote. It means getting involved. I personally know at least a dozen people who live in states that were safe red states who took vacation time and went and spent the last 2 weeks before the election volunteering for the Bush campaign in Ohio. Mm. I think you're going to see similar things happen this time because of McCain's 1-2 punch.
Let me go to Pastor Kevin Hebert in Vancouver, Washington. Kevin Hebert, you're maybe this emerging, I don't know if you call it a middle way or what, but a more moderate kind of evangelical, maybe not right down the kind of platform that Phyllis Schlafly, who we spoke with yesterday, has been right in the middle of hammering out for the GOP this year. How did you see John McCain before Sarah Palin's coming on the ticket? How do you see him now? Do you think the Christian right should be swinging in hard behind him? Do you think they will?
Well, that's a great question, Tom. My view is I voted for Bush both times. I'm a 35-year-old business owner involved in ministry, and I am absolutely 100% pro-life. I guess my largest question of the pick of Sarah Palin is, does it define the issue of life as purely being the abortion issue? And how does the voice of the other issues of life get to be brought up in this discussion as far as the issues of life that would be part of an environmental sort of discussion as far as taking care of creation, tending creation? How does that take care of sort of the issues of we have issues that may be related to inner city poverty that don't help the issues of abortion in those areas as well. And so I guess my question is, can we use this is a very large excitement that's being created by the Sarah Palin pick to not only be the reflection of life for the unborn baby, but then to also speak into areas of that for people that don't have voices, for creation that doesn't have a voice? And how does that get portrayed in the Republican ticket? And I think that's one of the areas that is, since the issue of life for the unborn baby overshadows everything else, is how do we bring that to the table to discuss, to really dialogue through that there are some other issues. Again, the issue of life should be the standard bearer, the beacon of hope that is brought into this world of matter of life,
But you're saying, look at the environment as well, look at people's health as well, look at how we take care, how we love one another, I guess you might say in biblical terms.
Yeah, I think that's the story of God as we get to see it. And how does that relate to my story as I interrelate to the world? How does that interrelate to a church's responsibility to be a leader, not only of the voice of life, but a voice of recycling in their neighborhood? I think that's I understand it's a very conflicted position as far as there are many sides to take, and so I guess my question is how do we begin to discuss these things in terms of life on a grander, bigger scale for all those who don't have a voice.
I want to turn to those issues, but I want to turn for a moment to Phyllis Schlafly, what you said on this show yesterday, because it was so hard, it was so harsh on the issue of life, and I want to get the response of our panel and more than that in an On Point show broadcast from the Excel Center here yesterday in St. Paul. We spoke with national conservative leader Phyllis Schlafly. A caller, Caroline from Bettendorf, Iowa, asked Schlafly how the Republican Party would view Sarah Palin if instead she were a Democrat running for VP with a new special needs baby and an unwed pregnant teenage daughter. Phyllis Schlafly, broad and brutal in her response, made an assertion about Republicans and Democrats. Phyllis Schlafly, what do you say to Caroline in Bettendorf, Iowa?
If Sarah Palin were a Democrat, she would have aborted the baby. That's the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And Sarah Palin demonstrated that she is pro-life in contra to all of the Democrats. And we think it's absolutely wonderful that she is so different. She is obviously a woman who has it all together.
Phyllis Schlafly with us yesterday. I said she was broad and brutal. I should have said broad, brutal, and wrong. I mean, we've got studies published in the U.S. since 1980. More than 90% of pregnant women carrying fetuses diagnosed with Down syndrome chose to have an abortion, which means, and God love them all, that by that number you're going to have a whole lot of Republicans and Democrats opting for abortion in these cases. I mean, I'm not here to judge. I had a baby brother with Down syndrome, but I was really struck by the sort of brutal tone of that. I want to turn, before I turn to my panel, to a couple of friends, actually. Julie and Dan Heffernan join us now from Boston. They happen to be Democrats. They happen to have a Down syndrome son. Julie and Dan, hi. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
They also happen to be members of my church, First Baptist Church in Newton, Massachusetts. But Julie and Dan, when you hear Phyllis Schlafly saying that yesterday, as parents of a wonderful Down syndrome son, Brian, who I know and love, what do you feel as humans, as Democrats, as parents of a Down syndrome child?
We are proudly Democratic, and we are proudly Brian's parents. And not only for us, the choice to have Brian took place before we were even pregnant. We never even had any of the standard tests that our doctors routinely administer during prenatal visits. You know,
and with your subsequent daughters, Maggie and Evie, who, because Brian was Down syndrome, might have had a higher risk of Down syndrome, did you have tests there?
No, although the medical community really put pressure on us to have them, we still said no. Not even the AFP test, which is routinely given practically to women between 15 and 20 weeks. We said no. We said this is our child.
Dan, when you hear Phyllis Schlafly saying, if Sarah Palin were a Democrat, she would have aborted the baby. You're a Democrat. What do you say?
Well, I mean, I say it obviously is infuriating, but it's also very ignorant because I think, I'm pro-life. I've been a Democrat my whole adult life also. And I think there's plenty of Democrats who feel the same way. I think it's also an issue about, the difference between Democrats and Republicans of, whether they are truly pro-life. And I think the Democrats have been more pro-life in terms of people with disabilities, in terms of, the quality of life for people with disabilities when they're born, as far as services and anti-discriminatory laws and the like. I mean, I think there's no greater champion for the rights of people with disabilities, whether they're infants or, adults, than Ted Kennedy, who is a great champion of the Democratic Party.
Julie and Dan Heffernan, parents of Maggie and Evie and wonderful Down syndrome son Brian, and as it happens, Democrats and friends. Julie and Dan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Richard Land, what about what Phyllis Schlafly said? Is that the kind of tone we should expect in this campaign?
No, I don't think so. First of all, there were 30 new Democrats elected to Congress in 2006. 15 of them are pro-life. And there's a growing pro-life caucus in the Democratic House. And there's an organization called Democrats for Life that we work with on several joint legislative proposals. We strongly supported the Democrats for Life 95-10 plan, which was to try to reduce abortions by 95% over the next 10 years through government funding for daycare centers at high schools and that sort of thing. I think that you noticed that what I said was that if Sarah Palin had been pro-choice, we would probably never have known she were pregnant. I didn't use the word Democrat, and I think that that's a gross oversimplification. I think that, sadly, there are too many people who vote Republican who, when faced with a personal issue, would have done not what they said others should do, but would have chosen an abortion. And there are many Democrats who are pro-life and even some who are pro-choice who would have chosen to have the baby.
I
think the key here is that Sarah Palin and her family made the pro-life choice. They affirm. Look, I think that the key here is a baby may be a surprise to its parents, but a baby is never a surprise to God.
Let's take a call from Stamford, Connecticut, and Carlos. Carlos, you're on the air to St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi, Tom. Yes,
hi.
I think it's a wonderful choice what McCain, who he picked, Palin, because I work with people with special needs as a second job. And also my co-pastor, his children, he has a daughter that's, she's Down syndrome, and it's a very sensitive issue, and it's just so, touching right with, who we are and as people. And, it's just a wonderful, wonderful choice. I think it's a rock the house type of selection, really.
But what about all the other issues that are out there? The economy, the environment, the war, the wars we're in the middle of, Carlos. Does Sarah Palin help on those fronts, or is it all about the abortion, pro-life issue for you?
No. It's all of that. I mean, Republicans, we have a good handle on that, on the economy. I mean, it'll play itself out, what it
doesn't
is.
Look so good right now, I have to say.
I mean, it doesn't look so good right now, but I mean, if you look, you read the Wall Street Journal, first-time home buyers is coming up now, because now they're, fixing up that the credit. And, that situation.
We hope, and they hope. Carlos, thanks very much for calling. Kevin Hebert, are you on board at this point with the McCain-Palin ticket?
I mean, to be honest, I am conflicted. I need to hear some more policies that would be a wider spread of life. I think Sarah Palin and John McCain both present positions that speak into life. I would just hope that her pick especially would be a bridge into other areas of life, that we could be able to begin to talk about some of the roles that poverty play in our inner cities, the roles of just how the church can begin to interact with ways that are environmentally sound and safe, and so I think that this ticket at this point, based on the one premise of being a pro-life ticket now, doesn't get me absolutely 100% on board. But it
hold the thought, Pastor Hebert. Thank you very much. We got to take a short break here. Reverend Richard Land, Stephen Waldman, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook, live from St. Paul at the Republican National Convention, looking at the Republican right and John McCain. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you from St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Republican National Convention. We are looking at the religious right and the McCain campaign. We've been joined by the Reverend Richard Land, president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, by Kevin Hebert, who is co-pastor at the church in Vancouver, member of the Restoring Eden movement, environmentally conscious, looking at being pro-life beyond the issue of abortion. And Stephen Waldman is with us. He's editor-in-chief, president and co-founder of BeliefNet. I want to hear a little bit from John McCain and maybe just a bit from Obama here. Here's the famous speech from February 28th, 2000, John McCain giving a speech at Cox High School in Virginia Beach, where he famously called Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, though not only them you'll hear, agents of intolerance.
Neither party should be defined by pandering to the outer reaches of American politics and the agents of intolerance, whether they be Louis Farrakhan or Al Sharpton on the left, or Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell on the right.
That was then. This is now at the Saddleback Civil Forum on the Presidency, hosted by megachurch pastor Rick Warren in Lake Forest, California, in August. John McCain told a story about his time as a POW, one he's told many times, and I want to ask our guests about it. McCain was standing outside his cell, he said, when he was in the POW in the famous Hanoi Hilton, and a North Vietnamese guard made a simple gesture on Christmas Day.
He stood there for a minute, and with his sandal on the dirt in the courtyard, he drew a cross, and he stood there, and a minute later, he rubbed it out and walked away. For a minute there was just two Christians worshiping together. I'll never forget that moment.
That cross in the dirt is the way John McCain has testified to faith many times. But Barack Obama was also at the Saddleback Forum, and he said this about what his Christian faith means to him.
It means acting justly and loving mercy and walking humbly with our God. And that, I think, trying to apply those lessons on a daily basis, knowing that you're going to fall a little bit short each day, and being able to kind of take note and saying, well, that didn't quite work out the way I think it should have, but maybe I can get a little bit better.
Richard Land in Nashville. Leave Sarah Palin aside just for a moment. The Republicans, while holding her up, are also telling us vigorously, don't forget John McCain is the man at the top of the ticket. You recall well, no doubt, his speech in 2000, the agents of intolerance comment. You know well, no doubt, his story about the cross drawn in the sand by the North Vietnamese guard years ago when John McCain was a POW. As evidence of his attitude toward religion, what do you make of those two, and why did the religious right find him so lacking before last Friday in the Palin addition to the ticket?
Well, I think, first of all, in the 2000 campaign, John was not happy. He was very unhappy with people on the religious right because they were overwhelmingly supporting his main opponent, George W. Bush. John has gotten to know some of those figures that he mentioned better, actually became quite cordial with Jerry Falwell before Dr. Falwell's death. I think that John McCain has come to know evangelicals better, and I think that they've come to know him better. Although, you know, and he got a significant amount of support among evangelicals during the primaries. And for instance, in South Carolina, he got 45% of the evangelical vote in the Republican primary, and Mike Huckabee, his main opponent by then, got 27% of the evangelical vote. So John has built bridges. He is not as comfortable talking about his personal faith as either Barack Obama or George W. Bush. And I'm not advising the McCain campaign, but if I were, I would say don't go beyond your comfort level because people feel it. Talk about your faith in ways that you feel comfortable talking about your faith, and leave it at that. And when it comes down to it, pro-life Catholics and pro-life evangelicals are more concerned about the person's stand on the issues than they are about their personal faith. They will take a pro-life person who is not as comfortable talking about their faith, or may even be of a different faith, over someone who is of their own faith, who is pro-choice. I have made the statement 100 times or more that I would vote for an observant Jew who was pro-life over a Southern Baptist who was pro-choice, and I've never failed to get a standing ovation before evangelical audiences when I say that.
Stephen Waldman, how do you see this playing? The Republican platform, the platform that's been gaveled in this week in St. Paul, has been called the most conservative platform in the party's history. Phyllis Schlafly, who we spoke with yesterday, was right in the middle of hammering that out, and she said very clearly, it's ours, it's not John McCain's, but on abortion, on immigration, it is very tough. I mean, back in 2000, John McCain, you know, presented himself as a kind of almost a middle way, at least a moderate alternative, looking to soften the then GOP platform's total opposition to abortion. How does this work for the Republicans and the McCain ticket now?
Well, it is the most pro-life platform ever, including the elections of George Bush. So, if you look at polling data, if you take these policies, which is abortion with no exceptions for rape and incest and a number of other planks, it is in sync with about 15% of the American public, 1/5. So that means there's a great big middle out there that is up for grabs. That and the middle in America on abortion is most people want it legal but restricted. They feel there are moral problems with abortion, but they want the choices of who actually makes the decision to be left to individuals. So there's a big question now for Obama of how does he react to this very, very pro-life platform from the Republicans. And there's two choices. He can go hardcore pro-choice to have a very clear contrast.
Distinction made, yep.
Or he can try to move to the middle and say, I'm pro-choice, but I want to reduce the number of abortions. I'm the middle ground. Those guys, the Republicans, are the extremists. And we're going to start to see that really in the next couple days, I think, which way the Obama campaign goes.
Some evidence out right now with the new ad from Obama.
Yeah, the new ad is a straight-up pro-choice ad that does not talk about reducing the number of abortions. It just hits pro-choice, pro-choice, pro-choice. And I think that tactically that probably means their efforts to win over moderate evangelicals will not succeed if that's the direction they go.
Kevin Hebert, I want to ask you about that, but let me turn to some calls first. From Ames, Iowa, Sue. Sue, you're on the air to St. Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
One of my biggest concerns is this kind of dialogue is so emotional and seems so rational to me. I'm an independent, but what's alarming to me is that if we start going back to the emotional kind of 9/11 fear atmosphere, are we going to address what really makes the world safer or nuclear proliferation? Are we going to address the fact that Sarah Palin's teenager should have had access to things that protect her health and prevent her from getting pregnancy? Why wasn't that child taught about that? Why was Sarah Palin, a woman over 40, already overextended, having a fifth child and putting that child at risk in the first place? These are important questions. And as a healthcare worker and an economist, I am blown away by the lack of logical dialogue that is taking place in the Republican Party. I was on the fence, but I'm not anymore after I'm so alarmed.
Sending you right the other way, Sue, and we hear that loud and clear. Let me get a call as well from Columbia, South Carolina. William, you're on the air.
Hey, my question is this. It seems like Republicans think that the only thing in the world is abortion. But if the price is on the line, look at 1 Timothy 3. They're showing here that a leader should lead by an example, by ruling his own house. And now we got a candidate in the ticket that can't even keep his eyes in order. Isn't that anti-Christian either?
House in order? You're talking about Sarah Palin? Well, I've heard a lot of readiness to understand and forgive on that front, even admiration for her decisions and her daughter's decision. But we've got your perspective right there. Let me get one more. Thank you, William. Let's go to Joan in Piermont, New Hampshire. Joan, you're on the air. Hello, Joan, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, Joan, you're on the air, Joan, to St. Paul.
Oh, yes, hi. Hello, my name is Joan. Yes, I had two comments. The first was the words birth control have never been mentioned in connection with this girl's situation. I also had a baby 50 years ago before I was married and later got married and the baby's now 50 years old. But in any case, there was no available birth control. I feel it's part of a mother's job now in this new world. We are no longer in the Middle Ages to prevent these distressing incidents from happening. So I feel that should be brought up, not that girl who is unfortunately now in public view, which I can imagine having myself gone through this, is very embarrassing to her. But I feel that somebody missed the boat on birth control, and I'd like to know what Mrs. Palin's ideas on that are. Is she intending to prevent the schools from teaching it, prevent clinics from distributing it, and have a lot of other pregnant teachers around. Pregnant teenagers around.
That's possible too. Joan, let us pick it up. As I understand Stephen Waldman, she is against teaching sex ed, against birth control for the unmarried, pro-abstinence. I think that's Sarah Palin's position. I'm sure we'll hear more about it.
Well, she's against that being taught in school. I can't imagine that she would be against talking about it at home. And that's a question, though. Is it possible that because all they talked about was abstinence, that they never talked about the other situation? If you didn't abstain, mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. happened then? That would be the open question.
I'm sure we'll hear more about all of that in the days ahead. Kevin Hebert, I want to ask you about this view of Obama. Obama's own faith more obvious and at play in this campaign than we've seen from his party in a while. Here's a view. We caught up last week in Denver with Reverend Jim Wallace, liberal editor of editor-in-chief of Sojourners magazine at the Democratic National Convention. He said that Obama and McCain are changing the usual distribution of faith along party lines.
The Democratic nominee, Barack Obama, I've known for 10 years, and he's, you know, he's a very committed Christian and very comfortable with his faith. John McCain struggles more with this question. And I think that's perfectly fine. But it changes the perception that Republicans are the Christians and Democrats are not. McCain, I think, is struggling with his relationship with social conservatives and evangelicals in particular. They know he's not really one of them.
Of course, that was last week before Sarah Palin was added to the ticket. But Kevin Hebert, you said you were still struggling, still on the fence. How do you think this is going to break among evangelicals? Of your perspective on politics, life, the world, do you think they'll be making sort of a serious weighing back and forth of McCain, Palin, Obama, Biden, or not?
I think that for the far right, I don't think that will be a choice. But I think there are a lot of moderate, maybe Republicans, that are sort of weighing the other voices of life that are going to be really questioning after really hearing Obama's sincere voice of faith and a real passion to follow a Christian sort of gospel in the world today of what does that mean to my vote, and what does that mean in terms of how that relates to how I would vote for him, because he speaks of things that resonate in me as far as the environment and poverty and helping those who can't help themselves.
Is there a point at which a Democratic platform on the environment, on poverty, the rest of the issues that you raise, might be so distinct from the Republican platform that you would overcome your deep convictions around abortion and go Democratic anyway, or not?
Absolutely. I think that is sort of the tipping point. And that's my question to the Republican Party is the boat large enough that we all can, that there can be those voices, those other things of life, and that we don't have to push the moderates out as sort of being the liberal extremists that we could be pegged as, but that we could truly be on that same boat, maybe having differences of opinion, maybe focusing on different issues of life, but that we could really be on that same boat. But I think if that's not accepted, I think that is a real question for me and probably other people like me, is maybe that is a choice that I will have to make of maybe voting democratically for the very first time.
There's the open question in Kevin Hebert's corner. Let me get one more call here from Wethersfield, Connecticut. Stephen, you're on the air to St. Paul.
Hi. My point is that I'm anti-abortion, but for the same reason, I'm anti-war. I believe that, and I just don't understand why that point is not strongly made. I'm not seeing on either side that they're making a point that it's the same. If we're gonna, if murder is murder, and I don't understand why that hasn't been stressed.
Richard Land, our time grows short, but what do you say to Stephen's perspective there, sir?
Well, I believe that Romans chapter 13 makes it clear that the civil magistrate has the authority to use lethal force to protect against evildoers who are trying to harm other people at home, and to use military force when it's been authorized by the state to protect the nation and to protect others who are being harmed abroad. I'm not a pacifist. I believe that that the civil authority has the obligation and the responsibility to use whatever force is necessary to protect the innocent. And I don't see the connection to killing innocent life in the womb as opposed to, you know, having a policeman use lethal force to kill someone who is trying to kill someone else. So I think that I don't see an inconsistency there. And back to a previous question, Sarah Palin is a member of Feminists for Life, which is a feminist group that is pro-life. And part of Feminists for Life view is that they do not take a stance that they're against birth control. And so while she may be promoting abstinence-only education in the public schools because she doesn't want to violate the rights of people who don't believe that birth control should be taught to minors, she is not against birth control. She would not be a member of Feminists for Life if she were against birth control. Mm.
Reverend Richard Land in Nashville, Tennessee with the Southern Baptist Convention. Thank you very much for being with us, Reverend Land.
Thank you.
This whole issue of the religious right, pretty low-key until last Friday in the edition of Sarah Palin. Now we're going to hear, it appears, a lot more. We've begun today. Pastor Kevin Hebert in Vancouver, Washington. Thank you very much for joining us, Pastor Hebert.
Thank you.
And Stephen Waldman with BeliefNet. Thanks very much for being with us right here in St. Paul,
Stephen. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook in St. Paul. This is On Point.